The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to St. Luke.
Glory to you, O Lord.
Once when Jesus was praying in solitude and his disciples were with him, he asked them, "Who do the crowd say that I am?" They said in reply, "John the Baptist, others Elijah, still others, one of the ancient prophets has arisen." Then he said to them, "But who do you say that I am?" Peter said in reply, "The Christ of God." Jesus rebuked them and directed them not to tell this to anyone. He said, "The Son of Man must suffer greatly and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the scribes, and be killed, and on the third day be raised." The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ.
Today in the first reading, we continue these reflections on the rebuilding of the temple in Jerusalem and how it prophesies the rebuilding of Jesus' body on the third day, how we're called to be a temple in Him collectively as His church, and how each of us is called to be a temple of the Holy Spirit. Here we see that there's supposed to be cooperation against these modern notions of a separation of church and state. The prophet Haggai is sent both to the governor as well as to the high priest and said, "Get your act together. Build this up." Now that doesn't mean in an American context that the U.S. government should be favoring one religion over another. But it does mean that the government should be favoring religion. Because as our first founding father said, our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people, and it's not fit to govern any others, unless we're living by moral principles, so that we don't need the law constantly to be compelling us to behave from the outside. It ain't going to work. So that's a very important aspect of today's first reading, that in order to be able to build something worthy, there needs to be that type of cooperation. But it's not just the work, as we know, of the governor and the high priest. It's the work of everyone. And that's what we've been focusing on all week long. Not just to build something spectacular for the Lord, but to allow the Lord within to build us up in order to be truly resplendent and filled with His glory. For that to occur, though, for us to become that temple of God, individually and together with others, we need to grasp what happens in today's gospel. And there are two parts of it. The first is that the church is built up of those who confess Jesus to be the Messiah and the Son of God, who proclaim Jesus to be the long-awaited one, but not just their notion, the Jewish notion of a Messiah who would kick out the Romans and foreign power so that the glory of the earthly kingdom of King David would be resuscitated. It was fundamentally a spiritual kingdom. Those who confess that this one, the long-awaited, is also God's Son, that God is with us, that we're not alone, and that He's come into our world to be with us until the end of time, to guide us and help us. That's the first aspect. The church is made out of those who confess Jesus to be the Messiah and the Son of God. There are many who are good people, including Christians, who don't really make that confession the way that the Lord would want. We can look, as Pope Francis likes to say, at the church as an NGO, as a non-government organization that cares about helping people alone, that we get involved in service activities, inspired by something, but not really primarily proclaiming the love of the Lord through our service. When I was at Bishop Connolly High School, I remember that the seniors had a community service requirement. And I asked, somewhat tongue-in-cheek, "What crimes did they commit?" "Excuse me, Father? What crimes did they commit?" "It's the judge who sentences people to community service after infractions. We Christians do something different. We do Christian service. that flows from our faith. They didn't really think it was much of a difference. So I said, could we go in and talk to some of the seniors? I'd have a few questions to make sure that they're actually doing service that follows from our faith. So I went in and I asked two simple questions. Seniors, you've been here for a few years. How does what you're doing flow from your faith? And how does it make you a stronger Catholic? And it would have been like I had asked the question in ancient Aramaic. I could get no responses because that connection between our faith and the love that our faith should inspire wasn't clear. That was because we weren't confessing Jesus through our Christian charity anywhere as much as we need to. So the first thing is to confess. But the second thing is that we've got to be willing to suffer with the Lord to have ourselves built up as a temple. Just like the temple was raised on the third day after the temple had been destroyed. Jesus, immediately after their confession, told them to keep it quiet because he didn't want the Jewish ideas of Messiah as a political liberator to spread before he would lay the groundwork for what his real kingdom was. But he prophesied, the Son of Man must suffer greatly and be rejected. Rejected by all those who should have accepted him first. The elders, the chief priests, the scribes. He would be killed, but on the third day that temple would rise from the dead. Pope Francis this morning said, this is a wake-up call for us as Christians. That in confessing Jesus, we have to confess the real Jesus. And he said, just like the rich young man, many of us like to follow Jesus up to a point. We're willing to listen to his beautiful teachings, but that we're moved by, he said, a culture of well-being. As long as everything's fine in my life, I'll be a good Christian. But when things start to go south, I think that God's betrayed me and now I'll go do my own thing. When Jesus had asked the rich young man to go sell all his property and come and follow him, we know that the rich young man held on to his stuff and waved Jesus goodbye. The same way many of us reject the cross, even though that's the only way we're going to be built up into the kingdom, individually and collectively, into a truly resplendent temple of the Lord. And so he said, are we going to be, Pope Francis, Christians of well-being, or are we going to be Christians who profess Jesus along the way of the cross? Today we celebrate St. Vincent de Paul. And his story, I think, is a great illustration of the change that's meant to happen in so many Catholics. He was a very bright young boy from a poor farming family in southwestern France. But his father recognized that he was very bright, and they had a relative in the family who was a priest, and the priest was living very well off benefices. He didn't even have to do much work, but he could maintain the collections from what was there, and he thought this would be a way for Vincent to do well and for him to take care of us. So he sacrificed a great deal to send him away for an education, and he was ordained a priest at the shockingly young age of 20. Wow. He was very charming, he was very bright, and soon he had campaigned his way up to be a chaplain to Queen Margaret of Valois in Paris. And he never stopped dealing with the old widows. There are still, unfortunately, some priests who are ambulance chasers, who deal with the old widows because they know that the old widows have to give their money to somebody. And so he went all the way down to Marseille to work on an inheritance. And while he was in Marseille, he took a little boat ride to a place called Narbonne. But the pirates hijacked the boat. They brought him to Tunisia. There he was sold into slavery. And for 3 years, he felt totally the other side. He was a changed man when he was eventually released. And he went back to Paris, where he was known. And he got under the influence of a famous future Cardinal de Barul was his name, who taught him about the real meaning of the priesthood. Because he was so gifted, he became the tutor to the family of the Count of Joigny was his name, who was the head of all the French prison system, etc. But Vincent, while he was doing a great job of tutoring the kids, felt a real desire to go out to where there were so many people living as slaves who didn't really know the Lord. So twice he left the position in order to go preach to just the peasants who had never learned. He had gone there once to give last rites to people, and he realized they knew nothing about the faith. And so that became his great passion. Twice he was called back by the count, but the only way the count could get him was by expanding his capacity to do good. So he made him the chaplain to all the prisoners throughout France. And he was able to go and preach the gospel to the prisoners and start to have a whole system. Never forgot the poor peasants, though. He said the only way they were going to get the gospel is when they would get priests who are committed to the mission, rather than living high on the hog in places where they'd be able to collect a good salary. So he founded the Congregation of the Mission to be able to serve the people in the poorest places. There in Paris, while he was associated with a lot of the rich, he recognized how many poor people were starving to death. So we got all the old widows together and started to form them into a community which would eventually become the Daughters of Charity. By the time he died, they were feeding 160,000 people in Paris every single day. But that wasn't even the end. He realized that one of the problems for the church in France is because the priests weren't trained. So because of his connections to the king, he said that before any priest would be able to get ordained, they needed to do a 2-week retreat with St. Vincent or the priests of the Congregation of the Mission he had founded. Eventually, those 2 weeks expanded to 2 years. Those were the first seminaries in order to train these men with a real pastoral heart. But he recognized that not even that was fixing the whole problem, because a lot of the times you'd have bishops who didn't deserve to be bishops, who were not men zealous for the salvation of others, but just wanting to live a good life. And because in France at the time, the kings always needed to approve the appointments of bishops that would come from the Pope, he put a commission together to evaluate the worthiness of these candidates for the episcopacy. And many he rejected. I could go on and on about the incredible influence and the indefatigable energy that St. Vincent de Paul had. But it began with that conversion. At first, to use Pope Francis's terms from this morning, he was a priest of his own well-being. But then, beginning with his slavery, he learned the cross. And then through a false accusation when he was back in Paris, when his roommate accused him of stealing all his money, when Vincent said, "God knows the truth, I'm innocent, but God knows the truth." For 6 months, he was treated like a criminal would rob from his roommate until the real thief confessed. And then through the sacrifice to care for prisoners, to care for the poor, to care for the peasants, to care for priests who needed formation, to care for the entire church led by bishops, he professed Jesus not only as the Messiah and Son of God, but the one whose supreme moment was when he was being murdered on the cross, that he recognized that Jesus on the cross was the portrait of the happiest man who ever lived at the instant of his supreme triumph. He was able to help others to follow him down this path, not of pain, but of the sacrificial love that bears even that much pain. That's why St. Vincent de Paul is such an incredible example for us to this day. Today, as we come forward, let us ask through his intercession for the grace to proclaim Christ as the Messiah and the Son of God, even when he leads us down the way of the cross, the path of self-giving, sacrificial love. This is the path by which we will be able one day to be reunited with St. Vincent de Paul in that place that Christ gained for us by this incredible victory. Praise be Jesus Christ.